Play this song, Ghostbusters. And the reason is, after 20 years, a bona fide 20 years of being a professional in the paranormal business, and having been interviewed myself on hundreds, if not thousands, of radio programs, people always play this silly song when they bring me on their show. They don't do it as much as they used to. I guess, you know, people's concepts have expanded a little bit now that paranormal investigation is so much more prevalent. But, I would just sit there and, they, you know, somebody, it didn't matter if I was in Europe, whatever, I knew I was going to be on, and I just wait till I heard the Ghostbusters music, and I knew that, you know, they were queuing me up. So that's why I only play this song on the Halloween edition of the show, and that's what you're listening to tonight. We are in the final hour of our big Halloween edition of Speaking of Strange. It also happens to be the Dark 30 hour. And we're going to dig into, some material that's more outrageous and controversial. We'll try not to disappoint those of you who tune in just for the nasty stuff. I'm Joshua P. Warren in the studio with producer Hardwood Forrest Connor. We have investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop. How has the Halloween season been at Wright's Coin Shop, Shelley?
Halloween season has been wonderful at the coin shop. A little bit slow the last few days since the weather's been nice, but it'll pick back up.
So, is it decorated at your shop?
No.
No?
Well, except for my desk.
Do you guys ever put up seasonal decorations?
Occasionally. We did put up a Christmas tree last year.
Yeah?
This whole decorating thing is tough for us. It's a really busy time. We like to, but we would rather have somebody else do it for us.
Right. But this, you know, we don't like to think about this, but it's true. The holiday season is now upon us. After Halloween, I mean, as soon as they take down the masks and the pumpkins and what, they replace it with candy canes and everything becomes all warm and merry for 2 months.
Exactly.
So, we're right at that transition point. We got a few more days of the ghoulish stuff, and then it's all going to be
Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Well, Josh, speaking of Christmas, you know, there's a certain CD that you and I play every time of year that
Yes, that's right.
To make it into the Christmas season.
And I think you and I are maybe the only people who truly appreciate that CD.
A lot of our friends we play it to are like...
Yeah, my wife tries to hide it from me. She doesn't want to hear it. It's rated Xmas. So, Riot's Coin Shop. Okay,
yes.
People are getting geared up already. They should be. Don't wait till the last minute. Start thinking about the holidays. If people want to confer with you, if they want to figure out how to do something really special for the next 2 months, I mean, what makes this even crazier is it's 2012. It's a presidential election season. And, I mean, there are just all these weird dynamics coming together this year. It's a time you should start thinking about your own personal security, keeping your finances secure,
right.
Taking that dollar that could be useless, turning it into something a little bit more tangible. How can people find you and contact you at Wright's Coin Shop, Shelley?
Well, they can call me at 828-298-5402. Or come out to the shop. We are at 1271 Sweeten Creek Road in Asheville.
Again, everybody, write that down. You can call Shelley Wright at Wright's Coin Shop and, you know, just talk to her and find out what she can maybe help you with, regardless of your budget. The number is 828-298-5402, and they're at 1271 Sweeten Creek Road. You know, I was playing Ghostbusters,
mm-hmm.
and it seems to me like maybe this is an okay time to talk a little bit about some ghostly experiences that we've had.
Right.
In fact, here's one of my favorite poems that we like to read this time of year. It's called The Haunted House. Do you remember this one, Shelley?
Sure.
The Haunted House. Here we go. On a hilltop bleak and bare looms the castle of despair. Only phantoms linger there within its dismal walls. Through the dark they're creeping, crawling, frenzied furies battling, brawling, sprawling, calling, caterwauling through the dusky halls. Filmy visions ever flocking dart through chambers crudely mocking, rudely rapping, tapping, knocking on the crumbling doors. Tortured spirits whine and wail. They grope and grasp. They wildly flail. Their hollow voices rasp and rail beneath the moldering floors. Shadows from the dim hereafter hang from every creaking rafter, laughing disembodied laughter in their ghostly glee. Shades of evanescent matter whisper their unearthly patter, rattle chains that chill and shatter on their spectral spree. Revenants on misty perches taunt the ghost that lunges, lurches as it desperately searches for its vanished head. Shapeless wraiths devoid of filling hover blindly by the ceiling, ranting, chanting, shrieking, squealing promises of dread. In the corners, eyes are gleaming. Everywhere are nightmares streaming, diabolic horrors screaming in the sombrous air. So shun this place where specters soar. It's you and you they're waiting for to taunt your souls forevermore in their castle of despair. The Haunted House. Nightmares. Poems to trouble your sleep. By Jack Perlutsky. You know, of all my years investigating the paranormal, I've seen a lot of strange stuff. It took me, I've said this so many times, I think it's accurate. I think it took me about 6 years before I actually saw a ghost.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
6 years. That's because you were looking down at your equipment all that time.
Well, probably. That was part of it. I even got to the point where I thought maybe I am one of these people who just can't see ghosts, you know, and I thought that was possible, that I didn't have something proper with my eyes or my brain or whatever to be able to see a ghost. And then, you know, one night I went into an attic of a haunted house.
Right.
And there was this blue-gray misty form swirling in the air. I was there with another researcher in the attic, and we both saw it. We even touched it. it felt cold in the middle. It kind of made the hair on the back of my knuckles stand up, like if you hold your hand up to a television screen, that electrostatic sense. And I even got a picture of it just before it disappeared. It started to dim, and I snapped off a photo. I'm pretty sure if you go to lemurteam.com and click the photo section, you can see it. That's L-E-M-U-R, lemurteam.com. So that was a big deal because I saw a ghostly form. But I still couldn't say, well, that's the spirit of a dead person, right? Well, then after that, I ended up encountering another house in South Carolina where objects were flying off the walls. I got to see this. And at one point, even went down there with the Lemur team. Brian Irish and I were in a room together, and he was shooting with a night shot. And you see our meter sitting there, Trifield Natural EM meter. All of a sudden, the meter squeals. There's a lot of energy coming up to it. And then it was knocked forward and then up on its side. So we got to actually see a meter being knocked around, and it was videotaped. But even then, I couldn't say that's the spirit of some, you know, disembodied entity. It wasn't until I went to spend a night at Myrtle's Plantation in Louisiana that I had this kind of life-altering experience. I was there all by myself for a whole night. There was nobody else on the property. It was a dark and stormy night. I was in my room, the General David Bradford suite, and I had the lights off, I had equipment turned on, and I'm rolling camera using the night shot feature, and all of a sudden I heard this pounding, and I thought somebody apparently, you know, had showed up, you know, 11 o'clock at night or whatever, and then knocked on the door. And I opened the door, there was nobody around, the rain was still streaming down, I went back inside, and again, I hear this knocking sound. So I spoke aloud in the emptiness of the room. I said, is there someone here who is trying to communicate with me? There it was again. And I said a second time, okay, once again, is there someone here who would like to communicate with me? And that's when this chill ran down my spine, and I realized there is something in this room that I cannot see. This went on for hours on command. I could ask this thing to pound on a wall or a table, and it would do it. I finally, and I captured all this on video. Go to YouTube, do a search for Joshua P. Warren, you'll see it. This went on. I finally went to sleep that night in that big four-poster bed, and the last time I remember it waking me up was about 8 o'clock in the morning, pounding on the headboard. And that was the only time in my life I ever actually asked a ghost to stop, because I'm usually trying to get them to do things. That was a life-changing experience, because there was something in that room that was conscious, interactive, aware. It left no doubt in my mind. This was not some atmospheric phenomenon or whatever. This was a spirit, a real disembodied spirit. And I've approached the paranormal in a different way ever since. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I've got a, well, I'll read you a Dark 30 story, and then we will continue this special edition of the show, the Halloween edition. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. We'll be right back.
knocking on the door. I got the moonlight. Yes, I almost got you caught. You try to scream, but girl, I take the sound before you make it. You start to breathe, and so it looks right between the eyes. Your very eyes, you got me feeling like I'm and no one's gonna say that I can be so much like you know me.
Stories. A woman came to the funeral parlor to see her husband's corpse. "You did a good job," she said to the undertaker. "He looks just the way he always looked. Except for one thing. My husband always wore a brown suit, but you have him dressed in a blue suit." "Well, that is no problem," said the undertaker. "We can easily change that." When she returned later, her husband was wearing a brown suit. "Ah, now he looks just the way he always did," she said. "I know you went to a lot of trouble." "Oh, it was no trouble," he said. "As it happened, there is a man here who was wearing a brown suit, and his widow felt that blue would be better. He is about your husband's size, so we gave him the blue one and gave your husband the brown one." "Well, even so," she said, "changing all that clothing was a big job." "Not really," said the undertaker. "All we did was exchange their heads." And that story is called The Brown Suit. From More Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. By Alvin Schwartz. Those were always good books. Good stories. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. And, you know, this is a Halloween edition of the program, but we are in the dark 30 hour. And this is when we read stories from time to time that are... not meant for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. I just saw this headline. What could this... It says, Japanese woman diaper trend. Some Japanese women have begun wearing diapers as a way to level the playing field with menfolk. According to this story, the logic goes that men are dirty slobs and have much lower standards when it comes to domestic cleanliness and personal grooming. So therefore, there is a movement of women in Japan who have decided to become gross, leaving dishes in the sink, not removing body hair, and peeing their pants. So rather than getting up to squat over the weird hole in the floor of a bathroom that passes as a commode in the Far East, women in this movement in Japan have decided they'd rather wear a diaper and let nature take its course. What do you think about that as a woman, Shelley Wright?
Ew. That's just like saying, I give up on everything.
It's like why embrace the thing you despise, right?
Exactly.
You're becoming just as gross as, I guess they're proving some kind of a point.
Could they not prove it in a different way? One that, ew.
And then, even though it's a Halloween edition of the show, we couldn't get through a dark 30 hour without a story from Golden Gate. Ring it! Florida! You knew it was coming. Deputies in Florida have apparently caught up with a man who was witnessed smashing into a car with his van and then fleeing the scene. When the deputy approached the van, he thought he heard the man mumble, "Oh, crap," we'll say. He used a different word, "Oh, crap." And as the deputy got closer, the man threw his van into reverse and simultaneously punched the officer in the face. Well, they chased the guy down, and they captured him, and they took him out of the car, of course, his van. They were photographing him, documenting his injuries, and that's when they realized that he had, quote, defecated in his pants during the incident, end quote. You notice this is the second, like, defecating in your pants type of story regarding law enforcement.
Yeah.
Everybody's crapping themselves for some reason when they're coming into contact with police officers. I don't know what that means. You think that's, like, flattering? Is that, if you are a police officer, does that mean you're really doing your job if the guy craps himself? I don't know.
I don't know. Would it be the cop to have to clean anything up?
It's not a good goal to have.
No.
Yeah. What is this? Here we have a story from Houston, Texas. Oh, man, how do I... Okay, the headline here is... I'm just going to read it, okay? I don't know... Sometimes I see a headline... I've been so busy, I haven't gotten to, like, really peruse these stories deeply in advance. So, we're kind of being exposed to all this at the same time. Again, that's your warning. It's not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. It's the dark 30 hour. The headline is, posing as gynecologist. Okay? Right off the bat, I haven't even finished the headline, and you shuddered, Shelley, right? Posing as gynecologist, gay 30-year-old tricks straight 51-year-old woman into months of sex and a civil union.
Huh?
This seems like one of those that we just shouldn't breeze over. like we could do a big segment about this without even... I mean, just from the headline, they say here, a 30-year-old woman was smitten with a 50-year-old lady. The two had been messaging each other for the past 7 years via Yahoo, during which time... they became closer and closer. One woman, posing as a doctor, a gynecologist, used that to sort of draw the other woman into an intimate relationship. And, you know, this gets so weird. Again, I don't even know how far I should go into it, but are you getting the picture?
So I'm thinking gynecologist is a pickup line.
Yeah.
That is so wrong. Ew.
Yeah. Yeah. On many levels.
Many, many levels.
There is a lot wrong with this story. I just, you know, it gets kind of confusing when you start trying to break down the story. So you have the general gist of it, nonetheless. And I've got some stories here that are really sick. And I will read at least one or two more really sick ones. Just to satisfy all of the sick people who listen to this program. But believe it or not, we are already up on a break. And when we come back from this break, we'll see how much we can squeeze in here this next segment. Because I would like to see, Shelley, if maybe you want to share a brief ghost story with us, something that you've encountered. It is the Halloween edition of the show. And we are kind of building up a little bit here toward the possibility of airing some just horrific, creepy audio, demon possession type stuff, and people keep on contacting us and saying, please, don't air this. It's weird. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Speaking of Strange, I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. We're still determining whether or not to play all of the exorcism audio that we have coming up a little later to finish off this hour. I understand the emails keep streaming in, Forrest Connor. Is that right?
I've actually gotten a couple here. One person talking about doing the playing the exorcism. They mentioned they're a Christian, and in the Bible it says you should not dabble in evil forces and forces that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And just saying that you don't know what you're dabbling in, and you should reconsider it.
All right, fair enough. You know, I am considering everything. It's all on the table. I'm looking at all of it. I do realize how intense this is.
One person says you're damning your soul to hell for doing this.
Really?
Yes.
Now, I don't understand that.
I'm just reading the email.
I mean, these are historic recordings. What's that, Shelley Wright?
Haven't you already damned your soul to hell
many times?
Yeah,
it's too late for me. It's too late for me. Here's one of our favorite poems for the Halloween season. It's called The Dance of the 13 Skeletons. And if you let your imagination roam, it conjures up all kinds of interesting images, things that may be taking place this very night under the chill of the stars out there in the mountains. In a snow-enshrouded graveyard, gripped by winter's bitter chill, not a single soul is stirring. All is silent, all is still, till a distant bell tolls midnight, and the spirits work their will. For emerging from their coffins, buried deep beneath the snow, 13 bony apparitions now commence their spectral show, and they gather in the moonlight, undulating as they go. And they'll dance in their bones, in their bare, bare bones, with the click and the clack and the chitter and the jack and the clatter and the chatter of their bare, bare bones. They shake their flimsy shoulders and they flex their fleshless knees and they nod their skulls in greeting in the penetrating breeze as they form an eerie circle near the gnarled and twisted trees. They link their spindly fingers as they promenade around, casting otherworldly shadows on the silver-mantled ground. And their footfalls in the snowdrift make a soft, susurrous sound. And they dance in their bones, in their bare, bare bones, with the click and the clack and the chitter and the jack and the clatter and the chatter of their bare, bare bones. The 13 grinning skeletons continue on their way as to strains of soundless music they begin to swing and sway, and they circle ever faster in their ghastly roundelay. Faster, faster, ever faster, and yet faster now they race, winding, whirling, ever swirling in the frenzy of their pace. And they shimmer in the moonlight as they spin themselves through space. And they dance in their bones, in their bare, bare bones, with the click and the clack and the chitter and the chack and the clatter and the chatter of their bare, bare bones. Then as quickly as it started, their nocturnal dance is done, for the bell that is their signal loudly tolls the hour of one, and they bow to one another in their bony unison. Then they vanish to their coffins by their ghostly thoroughfare, and the emptiness of silence once more fills the frosted air, and the snows that mask their footprints show no signs that they were there. But they danced in their bones, in their bare, bare bones, with the click and the clack and the chitter and the jack and the clatter and the chatter of their bare, bare bones. And that is The Dance of the 13 Skeletons from Nightmares, Poems to Trouble Your Sleep by Jack Prelutsky. What an image that conjures, eh, Miss Wright?
Yes, that is my favorite.
Really?
That is Halloween. Yes.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little ghost story. Tell us something you've experienced.
Okay. There are so many ghost stories I could tell you. But here's one. I guess it was late in my teenage years. I was still living with my parents. I grew up in Asheville, so this was in South Asheville. And I remember one night, I was trying to get to sleep. Had to be up really early to go to work the next morning, and the house was really hot and stuffy. It was winter time, but for some reason it was just hot and stuffy. I couldn't get comfortable, and I wasn't sleepy, and I had to get to sleep, so I thought, all right, I'm just going to take everything off. I took all my night clothes off, and I even threw off the covers, tucked them beside me, and I thought, okay, finally, I can get some sleep. I laid down, I closed my eyes. The next thing I know, I feel something at my feet, and it was the covers, and they covered my feet and my ankles and my legs, and it was just this the same speed all the way up over my waist and my chest, and finally ended at my neck. And whatever was there covered me up.
Is this a ghost story or something out of Penthouse?
No, this is a ghost story. I mean, I can tell you about one I saw. But that was scary for me. I never get scared about anything, but it was the first time anything ever physically interacted with me.
Really?
Yes.
That's like a scene out of one of these, you know, there's a movie, I can just see this happening. Was it The Apparition? I think it was.
No?
I think a little sheet kind of worked its way up and, like, engulfed the Ashley Green chick, right?
Is that
movie?
Where it tried to, like, smother her or something?
Yeah.
Your house killed my dog.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you want to know about a ghost that I saw,
well,
I've got one of those.
Well, actually, unfortunately.
Well, you, all right.
No, that was an excellent story. That was, no, truly, that was an excellent story. We are simply saying, you know, well, I'm sure all the men were very happy with the visuals that you conjured up, but that's great. It's theater of the mind. And here is, you know, you mentioned your house killed my dog, which is perhaps the greatest line from The Apparition. Listen to this story. This is from Los Angeles. Okay, this is Dark 30 story. I just got to squeeze this in before we go to break and wrap the show up. And I decide whether or not I'm going to play the really creepy audio. Okay, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended, turn the channel, whatever. That's your warning. A mother of two, they say, is fulfilling her maternal desire by breastfeeding her 9-year-old daughter's dog, a pug named Spider. The 44-year-old mother says she knows some people might consider her a freak.
You think?
But insists that breastfeeding nourishes the dog and makes her feel like a better mom. They say the dog developed a taste for this in 2010 after licking the nipple of a bottle that she had produced for her newborn son at the time, and that this has gone on for 2 years. See, I promised some good, crazy, Dark 30 material. That would qualify, would it not, Miss Wright?
Yes. Should satisfy the sickos out there.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will see. We will figure out whether or not we're going to maybe play some of this horrible exorcism audio or all of it. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the Halloween edition. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, the Halloween edition of the program. Some of you will not want to hear what I have decided to play in this last segment of the show. You know, the movie The Exorcist was based on the true story of a young boy, actually, instead of a girl, 12 or 13-year-old boy who lived in the Washington, D.C. area. Most of the information we have comes from a diary kept by an attending priest, Father Raymond Bishop. It occurred in the late 1940s, and this boy, upon becoming possessed, apparently was surrounded by all kinds of paranormal activity. They say furniture would move around him, a vase flew and levitated, a container of holy water placed near him smashed to the ground. There were vibrating sounds from his bed, scratching sounds on the wall, a heavy armchair in which the boy sat seemingly tilted on its own and tipped. Anything sacred around him caused these reactions, shaking bed, flying objects. The boy, whom they call Roland Doe, spoke in a horrible guttural voice. At one point, his skin produced welts, and these welts would sometimes manifest as words like evil or hell. These kinds of marks appeared on him. They say the exorcism ritual was performed 30 times over several weeks. And they finally said that when this thing left his body, there was a loud noise of some kind throughout the entire hospital where he was being treated. Apparently, he went on to become a successful, happily married man, a father, and a grandfather. In fact, as far as we know, he's still alive today. We don't know who he is. He's 76 years old, or thereabouts. But not everybody has been so lucky. There was a woman named Annalise Michael. She was being exorcised in 1976 in West Germany. And she died. In fact, the ministers there who were performing the exorcism actually went to prison because the court found that they had not done everything they should medically. They recorded some of their sessions with her, and what you will hear are the voices, the sounds of a 23-year-old woman being exorcised. Are these the voices, the sounds of something human or inhuman? Judge for yourself. Again, this is your opportunity if you don't want to hear this. This is some of the actual recording of Annalise Michael during her exorcism before she died. Now, as unsettling as those clips are cobbled together, here is another clip that I maybe have never played from a Russian exorcism done May 1st of 2004. Thank you. unsettling, huh? There you go. Happy Halloween, everybody. Because that's going to do it for this edition of tonight's program. I thank Brian Hall, Forrest Connor, John Anderson, Mobius, and Kuka. It's Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual. Till next time, we'll be at speakingofstrange.com. Sign up for the free e-newsletter and Twitter. Next week, we'll have a best of for you. But barring a ball game, we will return the following Saturday. Tune in then for a brand new one. You are commanded!
Right across the floor.